Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of PeopleStack Academy. My guest for this episode is Rhiannon Cicero, director of marketing and documentation at Deep Core Data. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And did I get your name right?
You did.
We practiced it like 10 times before I hit record. Awesome.
No, it's great. I get a lot of... I'm Brianna. I'm Rihanna. I would love to be Rihanna.
Rihanna. And I said that way too, right?
Oh, yeah.
That I have. Yeah. That's the last name. And say your last name in Italian, because we were practicing this before and it's just so beautiful.
Yes. So the phonetic Italian pronunciation is chiacchiaro, which means chatterbox or gossip.
That's awesome.
You won't have a problem getting information out of me, I'm sure.
That's great. So let's jump right in and tell us a little bit about Deep Core Data and what you're working on right now.
Yes. So at Deep Core Data, if you had to do a checkbox for a listing of what we are an IT and data services outsourcer. But I feel that doesn't really encompass most of what we do. We work a lot with the human element of technology. There is a rule out there for if you're techie inclined, you'll know it's called Moore's Law. And the extremely simplified and generalized version of Moore's Law states that technology, the speed of technology, memory storage capabilities and everything will increase exponentially over the years. And the problem is that human brains don't evolve that quickly. So we are kind of in a space where we are awash with technology and we've become so dependent on it from everything for our daily lives all the way through how we run business and how we interact with the rest of the world. And so what we have come to notice, especially in businesses who are finally getting off the ground, they're getting their idea out there, they're scaling up to bigger markets, is that the technology comes at them more quickly than they can handle. They're trying to keep doing processes using their employees, but what was meant to be a tool to make their lives easier is now becoming another hurdle they have to overcome. So instead of forwarding their business, pleasing their clients, and making better and better products, they're just trying to, you know, get back to square one because they now have this new thing they have to work with. They're moving from, you know, manually doing one thing to manually doing the same thing, but on a different platform that was supposed to make their lives easier. So we specialize in making sure that humans stay in control of their business. We aren't, you know, the IT department of yore was the guy or two in the basement who would tell you to turn your computer off and on again.
Yeah.
IT Crowd, great show. I suggest watching it. It explains a lot. But these days it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Because you need teams of specialists with wide breadths of knowledge.
Right.
Because every business process now has some manner of automation, compilation, data management. And if you don't have a team who fully understands how technology integrates with your daily business processes, then, you know, you're going to be left in the dust. And for some smaller companies, that could be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we really try to do at Deep Core Data is not just be the person who knows, you know, this is what a server is, this is how we'll make it faster, this is an application that will integrate. It's what is the outcome to your business practice, to your employees, to your customers, of us implementing this technology.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to take the more, I suppose, holistic approach to it.
Right.
As opposed to just saying, this is a technology, we'll implement the technology, have fun. We make sure that it's actually affecting the humans who will be using it in the most positive manner.
So it sounds like value-based, outcome-based IT tech support.
Very much so. I think a lot of, every IT company will say, we're reliable, we're fast, we're secure, you know, all we're you know, we price competitively.
Which is, you know, as somebody who's in the market for those kinds of things, those are like, okay, they have to be there.
Yes.
Right?
It's no longer a differentiator.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like on resumes now, it's like, yeah, I get it. You're a critical thinker. Everybody has to be a critical thinker.
I have great communication skills. You need to hire me.
I am results oriented. So yes. Yeah. A lot of things that used to be, you know, the buzzwords and the catchphrases, they're just part of business now. They're de rigueur. So you need something else that will make it worthwhile to somebody to want to engage with you. And for us, what that really is the fact that we use foresight, and we use not just what we know about technology, but what we know about business practices, about pleasing customers, about maintaining positive relationships, to make sure that the human element is never forgotten, and that, you know, technology stays as a tool, not an overlord.
Mm-hmm. So can you give some examples? So I'd imagine that it's going to depend on the client. Right?
Yes.
Like what kind of business the person or people are running. But can you give some examples so we can sort of get some more tangible, you know, what is it exactly that you might help people with?
Yeah, very much so. So one of the big things that we are trying to move into is application development and automation. And we've actually had two hopefully prospective clients now come to us in the past couple weeks saying, you know, I have an Excel spreadsheet and it is 500 lines long and it's color coded and one person does it and we've run out of the ability to fill the data in. And so we're just kind of doing it by hand. We're trying to make graphs.
So you mean they have so many columns in the Excel sheet that they can't add more columns?
They have so many rows and columns. It's become so complex.
Got it.
That now they have no real good interface. It's all being done manually. And people are like, oh, it's Excel. So, you know, this will make our lives easy. We can report and we can do all this stuff. And now it's become more upkeep than it's worth.
Sure. Got it.
So we're trying to help them move to a better database, develop, you know, some manner of user interface for them so that the job that is now taking, you know, an hour to color code and categorize can take like 15 minutes. So.
It's so, I don't know if funny is the right word. Sad may also be the right word here. But everybody does this, right, to a certain extent where you don't think about growth to a certain extent, right? Especially when you get to a certain point in your business that expect it's like, hey, things are buzzing along and this works. You know, the color coding of the Excel sheet works. Why should I change it? And then you slowly but surely grow more and more and more. And you don't always notice that growth, and it just because it just happens so slowly sometimes.
Exactly.
That you don't realize, oh, this thing that I've been doing for years and years and years,
it's
whether
creeped
it's color-coded
up on you
Excel
now.
Sheets, or whether it's, you know, I've talked with people who run businesses that are still doing, you know, old school like forms, you know, like not even using technology at all. And because they've just been doing it for 10, 20, 30 some odd years, they don't think about how technology might actually
help. And then they get to the point where they're like, oh, well, we're at full capacity, we need to keep hiring more people. And sometimes that becomes unsustainable because there are ways where you could make it easier on yourself, save yourself the money and the time, but you know, you're just so caught up in this one process, like you said, that we've been doing the whole time. Maybe it was tenable with 4 to 5 clients, but now that you have, you know, 40, it's not going to stay that way.
Right.
Yeah.
So it almost sounds like one way of thinking about it, what Deep Core Data does, what you do, kind of like a programmer for hire, but plus, right?
Yeah.
So somebody who can, a team who can write the code, write a program that can automate something for you, but also with the business know-how and the outcome-driven focus that a lot of programmers may not have.
Right. And I think, you know, in terms of software development companies and custom developers, they are very good at what they do. They are very good at creating a full suite package that they can deliver to a customer. But what we also bring to the table is the fact that we are not just development, we are full IT, we are full managed services. So, you know, if you're saying, you know, this process is really slow. We just need an application. And, you know, we look at it and we look into it and we're like, actually, you have a fundamental flaw with your database structure right now. Right. Or actually, one of the bottleneck is not in this. It's in the fact that your server is just running way at capacity. You need to fix a hardware issue. You need to fix an infrastructure issue. So we can come in and we can kind of peel away the layers,
yeah,
to get you to the real, to get to the root of the real problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the application might actually be part of that.
Sure.
But, you know, I think there are a lot of instances where a company says, we want X, not knowing that Y and Z are also a problem. They get mm-hmm. X and they're like, why isn't it fixed? This isn't what I expected. Right. And so we do try to learn more. We try to be a little more comprehensive in what we do. And, mm-hmm. you know, especially in terms of, you know, in terms of like the managed services, we don't just come in and say, oh, we'll set up your email. It's we'll set up your email. We'll set up your OS. We'll set up your servers, your virtual machines. Mm-hmm. We'll make sure that when an employee joins your company, it's not going to take an extra week for them to begin working.
Right.
That old employees are going to keep, you know, their security clearances when they shouldn't be, you know, throughout all the systems. You know, we offer that kind of support. If something does go wrong, we're there to make sure that, you know, it's done and taken care of really quickly.
Right.
So
who would you say is your favorite client or kind of client or kind of transformation, if you will? Can you think of something, you know, that was just really just, oh my God, they started off like, ha ha, and went to the point of like, so much better.
Yep. So without naming names, our favorite clients are actually ones where I feel like we get them on the road to recovery. So we engage, it's very interesting. Sometimes we engage with them like we're a hospital network. So we will have something happen where there's a catastrophic failure of some sort, a data loss incident, a hacking incident, a very, you know, significant downtime. And they have hours, you know, probably not even a full day to figure out the problem. So they will call our EMT service, if you will, and, you know, we'll do what we can. We'll make the patch that needs to be made. We will make sure that the process will run until we can sit down and actually find out what happened.
So you're talking about something like maybe a server going down and like a website just breaking and not working.
Just suddenly 404. Like, what is that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've worked with companies who do large contracts and often find themselves the target of hackers because they're working with some sensitive material. And so, you know, they'll call us and say they've just taken everything and they're holding it for ransom. Or, you know, something like that. So we, you know, we often find ourselves engaging with customers like that, where it enters the beginning of the engagement is an emergency service. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we sit down and we have a conversation with them and we say, how can we prevent this from happening again? Right. And, you know, we aren't a security provider. We don't have like our own security suite or whatever, but, you know, we have the experience, we have recommendations. And then we can kind of take a look into where is this coming from? Is there a hole in your infrastructure? Did your web admin not set something up right? Yeah. Is there an employee in the company who's on sites he should not be on? You know, mm-hmm. all those kind of things. So mm-hmm. a lot of times after we've built trust with somebody because we've saved them from a very dire situation, they'll later come to us saying, you know what? We're going to be proactive. We're going to switch from damage control to insurance. And then from there, we can actually start some projects that are going to patch holes before they become a problem, where we can, again, get into their business processes and find out where technology might be creating, you know, whether it's a vulnerability or a bottleneck. And I really like when we can take a system that is, you know, either in disrepair, very complicated, or, you know, has been almost neglected for a while. And we can kind of turn it around and get the people in charge thinking more about where they want to take the company and how they want to use technology to do it. Right. So that feels good.
Yeah, it's an opportunity. Sometimes those emergencies can turn into opportunities.
Yes.
To really change the way
yep.
that you approach your business, that you approach even hiring. I love the way that you kind of brought hiring into the fray, that like people may say, oh, I need to add more humans to my company. Maybe not. Maybe you just need to automate more, or or delegate more, or or whatever it is. I love that.
And mind you, I don't love getting the calls that say somebody stole all our data. Like that's really sad. We hate hearing that. But
But you could turn that into a really nice opportunity.
We know it happens, and so we'd rather be there to help when it does.
Absolutely. Let's talk about technical documentation. Yes. I know that's something that you do as part of your job.
Yes.
So what is it, first of all? And then we can get into the nitty gritty of how we do it better and all that stuff.
Yes. So technical documentation, most people just think it's a user guide or, you know, the spec manual, but it goes beyond that. It's any form of usually written, but any media communication that gets a customer feeling more confident and knowledgeable about the product they're using. So that can take the form, and increasingly it is taking the form, of white papers, FAQ sites, support forums, a wiki. We've set up wikis before for customers. So it's whatever type of platform that works best to get the information disseminated. A lot of people these days don't want to sit on a phone with a support system. A lot of people don't even want to write a support ticket. And, you know, some will, and we run tech support systems. But we also try to provide as much documentation as possible to clients of clients so that they feel like they're empowered. They know how to use the system without having to constantly lean on their vendor to figure out every step of the way.
Right, exactly. I'd imagine there, excuse me, would be video. I like videos.
Yep.
Sometimes, actually, I was going to say. Sometimes I like watching a video, sometimes I don't.
Yeah, it depends.
Or sometimes I'd rather just, you know, search the FAQ and see the answer to my question.
A lot of times people want to type a question into the Google search bar and have the answer on link number one.
Yeah.
And click it and it's there.
That's right.
And, you know, I think, I don't remember the exact statistic of it, but the time from question to resolution, ideal question to resolution, has plummeted from like 45 minutes to, I think, like 45 seconds. Like it's something like it's like an order of magnitude now that people are willing to wait to get an answer to their question.
Yeah, so, because there are so many folks who are doing it so well.
Yes.
So you experience that, right? And you're like, oh, this is awesome. And then when you're using a piece of software where it's just seemingly impossible to get the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Or, God forbid, you have to call the number.
Right. People don't have patience for sitting on lines with humans. And a lot of times, you know, in smaller companies, the humans on the other line are the developers, because there's no build out for the IT or the tech support structure. And developers, on average, hate being tech support because that's not what they're here for, to not to explain for the fifth time today, this is how you find this menu, or no, it's not broken, you just haven't uploaded this correctly. So, you know, the more you can take off of them, the better you end up being, because it gets back to the whole, am I really utilizing my employees to the best of their abilities, to what they really want to be doing, or am I just overloading them to play catch up all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And if, you never want them to just be playing catch up.
Right, exactly. What are some best practices in technical documentation?
Oh man, I have a whole talk on this. I have a document about it.
Awesome. A document on technical
documentation. A document on documentation. there are actually, I have called them the four C's of stellar documentation. Let's see if I can remember what they are. So the four C's are clear, concise, complete, and the fourth one has to do with them all being consistent.
Consistent.
Okay. I got it. Okay. I remember things. I gave this talk months and months ago.
Clear, concise, complete, and consistent.
Consistent, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can edit that out if you want. Or leave it in. I'm human. I don't care. But
no, that's fine. I do the same thing. I'm like, so there's four steps in my interviewing process. Okay, let me see. What's the first one?
Yeah. I think it has to do with a human. Pretty sure. So my four C's are clear, concise, complete, and consistent. And they kind of run the gamut from the beginning of the writing process to the very end of distribution.
Yep.
And, you know, just to go over very briefly, so clear obviously means that you're speaking in the language of your audience, that if you're writing something, you aren't doing it from the perspective of someone who has spent months or maybe years understanding the product. It's somebody who's looking at it with fresh eyes, trying to get a very specific objective out of it. Mm-hmm. They're not just trying to, you know, learn the software just for the sake of it. They have a reason that they spent money on this. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure that when you're talking, that you aren't being overly verbose, that you're using images or graphics if necessary, that you're breaking it down in a way that people who skim now will be able to understand. And which ties in a lot to concise, because you need to tell them what they need, but no more. Because the more extraneous details you find, the harder it's going to be for them to get what they actually need out of it, which is why things like bulleted lists, instructions, FAQs at the end are very important. You know, a good manual might have a couple appendices at the end, because maybe some people already know some of this stuff. They don't need it. You don't need to put a 3-page list of commands that you can use in the middle of your document. And then on the flip side is complete. So you need to make sure that everything you're saying is adding value, and that everything that a person would reasonably need to know to operate is in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't have to tell them turn on your computer, but if you know, if you need to launch a certain program ahead of time to be able to run the software, they need to know that, because there are things that are, again, instinctive to you because you've been working on it forever, but not instinctive to them.
Yeah.
And consistent is, after you've written the document, how do you make sure that people who read any of your documents will know where to look to find what they need? And that, you know, that just comes down to proper formatting, making sure that you find a way to, you know, label if it's an index or table of contents, if it's digital versus print. How are you going to distribute your materials so that somebody knows exactly where and how to look for the information they need?
Awesome.
And obviously, you know, I use tech as an example, but there are, that applies to almost any industry. And you need to make sure that, you know, if there's something like a safety warning, you need to be able to display that prominently. Mm-hmm. If there are branding concerns, you need to make sure you're being thorough and consistent about them.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, keeping those in mind, I think, are some of the really big important factors in documentation. And you know, there are so many tips and tricks you can use, like making sure you have an editor. Have, you know, even if you know you're the best writer in the company, just get a fresh pair of eyes on it, because
anybody,
you'll write a sentence 6 times, you'll have read it over, and you'll forget that the word "the" isn't in there. Like, you just, because you're so, you know what it sounds like in your head.
Yeah.
And small mistakes can, you know, get through, or not so small mistakes.
Yeah.
So, you know, always having an editor, using templates. Templates are great for making sure that your stylization is consistent.
Yeah.
A style guide, which is pretty much the content version of a template.
Okay.
Where it's the list of rules. It's, we use this heading for this kind of, you know, outline. We use, we use no second person tenses, so we never say the word "you."
Okay.
Because some, you know, based on what the tonality is, you might want to say, oh, first you go do blah, blah. But sometimes, especially in B2B, it's a lot more formal, where instead of saying you need to open the program, it says open the program.
Okay. So it's more directive.
Yes.
It's more just,
More directive. Okay. You would say a user can instead of you can. Because it needs to be more generalized, less formal, or less informal.
Okay.
So, you know, just things like that to take into consideration.
Yeah.
Font sizes for readability, how you're supposed to refer to a specific object or program that you need to work with. So imaging captions and stuff. So
got it.
All those things.
Awesome. And if people want to learn more, you said that there's a document and that you've also done a talk on it. Where can people go to find out more about this stuff?
Yes. So I actually have, I think there's a blog post on it. So if you go to deepcoredata.com/blog, you can find that and all sorts of other things. And I can send you the link.
Awesome.
To get that directly.
Great. Yeah, and we can add the link maybe below the podcast. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, Are you a tech manager? Do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? If so, check out my free tech leadership webinar where I share the 5-step game plan my clients used to command 200K plus salaries while upping their free time by 20%. Learn strategies for becoming a leadership master and evoking the best performance from every team member, leaving you gushing with pride. To reserve your spot, go to genbunk.com/webinar. That's genbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview.
So let's talk a little bit about you and your career path. I read on your LinkedIn profile, I love this, that you basically talk about your range of professional experiences.
Yes.
Like from retail and marketing to even music and cooking. So I'm curious sort of at the micro level and the macro level. So at the micro level, how has all of this stuff sort of led to where you are right now? How has it helped you?
Yeah.
But also I'm curious in a more, what is life kind of way.
What is
sort of
you?
Philosophical, right? Yeah. Who am I kind of way. How that has played a role in how you approach just in general, how you think about life. Yeah.
I was born a poor man in a log cabin. And
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's hard for me to answer those separately because I feel like they've all kind of intermingled, like experience that I've have influenced my life and my philosophy, which then have experienced, they all kind of tie in together. So I would say that both personally and professionally, one of the things that I've noticed is that I am what academically they may call well-rounded, but it goes beyond that. It's not just that I have a very nice upbringing or whatever. It's that when people talk to me, it's very, very rare, very difficult for them not to find a common thread with something that's happened in my life. I find that I can relate to so many people that I wouldn't expect to. Yeah. People of different ages, people of different genders, people of different nationalities where, you would think these two people have nothing in common, but I've been in so many different places emotionally and in my living situations and everything that I can usually find something that, will tie us together, whether it is a hobby like cooking or singing or knitting or, reading or, any of these things, or if it's something more human, something of being a child of divorce, being a mental health advocate, all those kind of things where you form deep connections with people, having a very strong outlook on things like karma and, self-awareness and, all those things, you can look at somebody and you might think, oh, I know what that person's about. They're wearing a suit. They talk like this, but you get into it and you find out that there's something about them that you never knew would be possible. But then when you connect to them on that level, you start to understand, and this happens a lot at networking events, you start to strip away the business card facade and realize, oh, okay, this isn't just a prospect or a lead or a referral connection. This is a human being that I'm talking to. And I think the more experience you can have, positive or negative, build you up to be able to make those sorts of connections. And I know a lot of people say, if you had one regret or if you can change any one thing, what would it be? And I'm not sure I have any regrets, not because my life was perfect, but because, far from it, but the negatives I've had in my life have all led me somewhere that I wouldn't be if I hadn't had to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that everything turned out for the best. There are some things that, if I had had more foresight, then I would have done it differently. But now going back, I understand why I had to go through it to get to where I am. Sometimes it's nothing more than a motivation to stay out of rock bottom or something, but it's something. And I think that, all of those together with, going through, you mentioned retail and things like that, I went through a period after college where I had very low self-esteem. I had like my depression had kicked in and anxiety was, I was through the roof. I was living away from home for the first time in my life. I ended like a 5-year relationship. Like everything was like, it was up in the air. And I graduated college and I was like, I can't do anything anymore. I'm not even going to challenge myself. I'm just going to do whatever job I know that I'll be good at and won't have to think about. Or, you know, I tried the housewife thing for a while like that. None of that worked out for me because I realized, you know, I'm just letting myself be scared and uncomfortable. And what I really need to be doing is challenging myself more because, you know, I'm an intelligent person. You know, one of my big things is making sure that I destigmatize positive behavior. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, I can't call myself intelligent in front of other people. They'll think I'm bragging. It's like, no, I'm smart. Yeah. So you know, everybody awesome. Listening, tell yourself you're smart. Tell yourself you're a hard worker. Say good things about yourself. Yeah, but that's my PSA for the day. Awesome. But, you know, I realized, you know, I need to challenge myself. I need to get back out there. And it took a long time and many years of feeling low to realize just how important it was to work on myself, to try and get somewhere better, and that it was going to be a process and I wasn't going to undergo a magical transformation of Zen and suddenly be totally happy with my life. And I think, you know, it wasn't until I had accepted that I was actually able to put myself out there, find the job I'm in, finally now in a job where I'm challenged, where I'm respected, where I know that I have a high level of responsibility, but a high level of, you know, trust in me. And that, you know, that kind of feeling is something that years ago I never would have expected to be able to achieve. Mm-hmm. So...
yeah,
I veered off your question completely.
No, not at all. I was just thinking that I love the way that you approached the question. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I wanted to get when yeah. I was thinking about the, you know, because we all have these sort of these experiences that shape ourselves. And do you have regrets? Yep. And do you not? And so, yeah, thank you for taking us yeah. down your journey. What about where you are right now? So one thing that I keep coming back to in my mind is. You're in marketing.
Yes.
Right? And so you had mentioned thinking about that you're not just a prospective client. You know, you're
right.
not just someone who might buy my product or listen right. to my service. That you're a human, right?
Yeah.
A multifaceted human who, yep. who makes mistakes and has emotions, both good and bad.
Yes.
And I would guess that the way that you look at life, well the experiences that you just talked mm-hmm. about in your perspective can help you and kind of sort of set you apart
yeah.
from the typical marketer who's just thinking about, you know, okay, what copy do I need to write? What funnel do
right.
I need to build in mm-hmm. order to attract, you know, hordes of people
right.
that a much more human-centered approach can be.
Yeah. Helpful. And I think, you know, some people wish that you could input buzzwords and output cash, that humans were like sales robots. You could just say the right thing and then program them to pay you money. And that's not how it goes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've noticed I had to delve into sales a bit because, you know, we were a startup. We were very small a couple of years ago and I had to do sales, which I had never done before. And I found that I hated it. I
yeah.
absolutely hated doing sales. I wasn't very good at it, but I love marketing. Even though I had barely more experience in marketing than I had in sales, I found I was just so much better at it. And when I tried to reflect on it and think, why am I better at marketing than sales? Why do I like it so much more? Is because there is less of a pressure, I think, on trying to make a deal or get value, you know, get a very specific type of value out of an interaction. Some people are very good at the human-based sales or at value-based sales or at consultative sales. You know, there's all these different kinds that work for all these different markets, but I tried and I couldn't get it out of my head that if I'm doing sales, I have to meet these quotas. I have to, every interaction has to be this valuable to me. And I hated it.
Yeah.
I did not like having that mindset because I didn't want to treat people that way. I didn't want to treat people like the, you know, the sales robot. I wanted to just learn about them, find out where their value is, find out if there was genuinely anything we could do to help.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very lucky now we have a sales team. We have a great sales team that we work with. Mm-hmm. We actually outsource to a company called Diversified Sales Solutions.
Okay.
And I love them because they know how to understand a person based on their industry, what role they're in, what kinds of events they go to, how, you know, you could interact with another company to suit them best. And they're willing to ask those questions of like, do you have any needs, you know, whatever, which I'm afraid to ask because I'm always concerned with making a good impression on people,
yeah,
and just establishing good rapport. And I'm afraid of asking anything that might, you know, kind of upset them.
Yes.
So, because you never know what's going to ruin the deal. So,
I totally relate to this.
Yeah. So I found that, you know, through my experiences that what really resonates with me with marketing is the fact that I can not just focus on leads or customers, but I can focus on reaching a broader audience. I can focus on making partnerships with other vendors, mm-hmm, who want to provide, you know, it's very important that we kind of share the value. If I'm going to partner with somebody, I want to know that their first thought isn't, we have this great product, so we're going to sell it to anybody that we can. I want to know that they're willing to say no to a deal, that they're willing to say, we don't think we can help you. We want you to get something better out of it. I've, mm-hmm, sent people off to staffing agencies before. I've told them hire an intern because it's not worth the money they would spend or the time we would put in,
yeah,
to get that one job done.
Yeah.
You know, it might be something like somebody just needs to sit on a phone for an hour a week or, you know, do some data entry. And I'm like, there are people who can get this done,
yeah,
with the same level of skill for, you know, much less than we can. Mm-hmm. And I would much rather you have that than feel beholden to us.
Yep.
So, you know, I feel like that's somewhere where marketing has helped me a lot as opposed, mm-hmm, to sales, because I have that flexibility. I can make partnerships with people like that. Mm-hmm. And I get to meet people like you. Mm-hmm. I get to talk about our brand candidly without, right, having that veneer of, you know, we only have 30 seconds to make the elevator pitch. We have to switch the business cards. We have to, you know, and then we'll, right, follow up later. I get to just sit and talk to people I like about things that matter to me. Yeah. So, and I get to actually share why I'm excited about the company, not just, well, they pay well.
Right. You know, exactly. Good.
Like it's that's not why I get up and go to work, yeah, every day.
I can totally relate to that because I'm still in the early stages of, mm-hmm, of building my company, but I never want, at this point now, ask me in 5 years, I may have a different answer, but at this point now, I don't have dreams of building it out beyond maybe one or two full-time employees, right, you know, if that, right? So right now I'm pretty much a one-woman show. I'm a one-woman, yeah, band. So I'm doing everything for marketing and yes, sales. And yep, I can totally relate to what you're talking about, that there is this sort of fine line between the marketing and the sales. And when you're the same person doing both,
yeah,
it can be hard to sort of go back and forth. So yes, there are times when I'm talking to a prospective client where I kind of have to sometimes put on the marketing hat, sometimes put on the coaching hat,
yes,
and sometimes put on the sales,
yes,
hat.
Yes,
and
yes.
And it can be hard. And mm-hmm, right now I find it fun and it's a great learning experience.
Yeah.
But eventually the first hire that I'm probably going to make is for someone to do sales.
Yeah.
Once I get better at it, get a sense of what questions to ask people and make sure that my marketing funnel is in place.
Yes.
Then I'm going to get somebody to do the sales piece of it for me for the, yes, exact same reasons that you just said.
Yeah. And I also love the idea of content marketing where you're adding value just by presenting something,
yeah,
to a person, where, mm-hmm, whether it's a blog post or, you know, a paper, or you know, an event, something where they know I'm not beholden to make a deal with this person,
right,
but I can learn from them. I want us to be seen as an authority and a resource, not just somebody. I don't want to be transactional. I, yeah, don't like transactional IT. I don't like transactional consulting. Yeah. I don't like transactional tech. Like, for the most part, I don't like transactional tech, mm-hmm, at all. Mm-hmm. I feel like we need to remember that every, you know, most companies have computers, but every company has humans. And we always need to be willing and ready to deal with that and whatever comes up. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a big part of what I do and why I'm trying to get as much information out there as possible. Yeah. So,
So I'm going to use that as a segue. I love that quote. Most companies. Okay, let's do it. Yes. most. Not all companies have computers.
Well, most companies have a computer, but not all companies have humans.
Right. So speaking of humans,
yes.
I'm going to ask the last question, yes. which I ask to pretty much everyone who I interview, which is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
I think getting people to open up and be vulnerable about the problems that they may be facing. There are a lot of people that I've talked to that would be ideal clients for us. They're overloaded with what they have to do. They know there's a better way. They know that, you know, the technology is out there, that, you know, it could be done either faster, cheaper, or just with less headache. But they're so overwhelmed by it, they can't even consider bringing somebody else in to help with it, because then they don't consider it as a value add. They consider it as one more thing on my to-do list. And, you know, between that and between the people who don't want to admit there's a problem because they want to just keep chugging along, and between the people who they meet you, they know that you're somehow related to sales or marketing, whatever, and they immediately shut off. Yep, they just put the veil down. Those people, you know, I don't get mad at them. I don't think that there's anything wrong with them, because I 100% understand why they would act that way in certain experiences. I completely get what could lead them to that point to take any of those actions or have any of those thought processes. But I just, you know, it's sad to me sometimes. Like, it hurts, because I look at them and I say, we can help you. Please let us help you. Yeah. But all they hear is, hire us, give sure. us money. And that's not what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Because I can see the problems they're going to face, but yeah. they just don't want to, you know, they're not comfortable facing them themselves. So mm-hmm. I would say that's the biggest challenge we have, is just getting people to drop the facade and just talk to us candidly. And sometimes the answer isn't, you know, hire us or make a deal with it. Sometimes it's just, let's sit down in a room for 2 hours. Let's go over what you're doing and see what you can do better. And sometimes they walk out of there without paying us a dime, but we don't charge to ask questions, you know?
Right.
If we decide that, you know, there's a technological component to it that we can help with, then yes, we'd love to jump in, make a proposal, and figure it out. Mm-hmm. If not, and it really is just you need to put everything down on a list and budget your time better, then we'll help you with that. But we'll at least give you a step. And I just hate when people won't even open up that dialogue with me, because I'm not out to take your money. I'm out to, you know, I mean, the financial side, I'm out to make you more money, but really I'm out right. to make sure that your idea succeeds and also that you sleep ever.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, one yeah. of the things that I say to my, you know, potential clients is that I'm not in the business of taking money out of your pockets.
Yes.
I'm in the business of putting money back in your pockets.
Yes.
And for some people, it's hard to make that shift.
Right.
And one of the buzzwords, speaking of turning buzzwords into cash,
yep.
but one of the buzzwords that I've been seeing a lot lately and been thinking about lately is authenticity.
Yes.
And it sounds like you as a person, but also DeepCore Data as a company,
yes,
sort of, that's a big part of who you are.
Yes.
Is being authentic.
I actually try not to use authentic or genuine too much, because I know now we're getting saturated with that word
but
as well.
That word itself.
I'm trying yeah. to, if you know, if you have any ideas, I'm trying to come up with a better phrase to, you know, to explain that we are, you know, we're true to self, human based yeah. sort of work. Right. And I get it. You know, outsourcing for years has had the stigma of it's some guys in Russia who are just going to code something for you. You'll never really speak to them, and that's it. And that's, you know, yes, that still exists. And yes, for some people, that's very valuable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just need something very basic for as quickly and cheaply as possible. But that's not a one size fits all solution. So, you know, we really do try to get people to open up, and we try to be vulnerable ourselves, which is why we'll say no to a project if we don't think we're right. capable for it, which is why I build my vendor network, because I want to be able to say, you know, you're not going to get the best value out of us. Let me show you where you can.
That's
great. So, That's you great. Know, hopefully, hopefully talking with you, some people can understand that and take that to heart, that I really do mean what I say, that I'm not just putting up a front of, we care about our customers. Because again, that's something everybody says.
Right.
But we care not about our customers. We care about the humans we are working with.
Mm-hmm.
Because customer, I feel sometimes now, is decoupled from the word human. Like people think of a customer as something different than a person. It is
right.
Not true.
Exactly. You can sort of take away the dollar signs from the eyeballs.
Yeah.
And sort of, it's more about let me see who you really are as a person.
Exactly. And you have to. You always have to work with that. If you're working with someone and they have a specific communication style, or if, you know, they prefer facts and visual charts versus a written story.
Sure.
You know, you have to know that. And it's not, you don't live in a bubble, and you can't work in a bubble, and you can't create in a bubble. So, yeah,
absolutely.
You know, there's a lot to it, but
absolutely.
I like taking it on.
We were just about up on time. It was fabulous talking with you, Rhiannon.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks
I
for taking
very
your
much
time
appreciate
today.
It.
Yeah.
So
great. Okay.
We'll see you again, right?
Thanks. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks.